What's up, everybody? Another edition of the On Fire podcast, first of 2023. Great to be with you, Derek Tokerson. Hope your new year is off to a fantastic start. Got to show our appreciation for the sponsor of the On Fire podcast. That is, of course, OGs. Head to OGs.com, sign up and download the OGs app. You can visit your local OGs, eat pizza, drink beer, earn rewards. OGs rewards available at select OGs locations. They're always launching new beers like the Hazy Go Crazy IPA. And of course, we're entering week 18 in the NFL, soon to be in the NFL playoffs. Got the national championship game on Monday, NBA, all types of stuff going on. College basketball, go watch the Aztecs. OGs is a great place to catch a game. Let's talk about some Padres. First, the walk-up music. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to you, Derek. Happy New Year to our multi-platform producer extraordinaire, Fernando Ramirez, who's sitting across the table from me right now, making sure that this gets up on Spotify and Apple and the website and YouTube and all those different places. Hope your New Year is off to a fantastic start. Derek, how do we find you this Thursday afternoon?
Busy but happy. Thank you for asking. How are you? How's lots of noise going on at your house these days?
there's lots of noise. I texted you. Got a little caught up just trying to make sure the twins can settle and get into a relaxed mode before I ship them off to Laura to handle them for the rest of the day. So it's like, try and do my part before that. But they've been a lot of fun. It's been nice getting some quality time with them. But fun to do this. This is a part of the job I thoroughly enjoy. And so I've missed doing the On Fire podcast. So it's fun to be with you again. And we were both.
By the way, big ups to Todd Strain for filling in all these times. Who just continues to step up in any way, shape, and form imaginable. Todd, great to have him as a never-ending resource.
No doubt about it. He's been killing it. Killed it during the playoffs, killed it in winter meetings coverage, and then joining us and joining you on all these podcasts. So we appreciate all that Todd Strain does, not just for the podcast, but for the NBC7 sports team. We were kind of lamenting before we started that we didn't have like something really meaty to talk about today, like some breaking news. There was
Wilmer
one.
Font.
I was going to say
Wilmer
one.
Font, darn it.
Below the radar acquisition, but something that would make the needle bounce a little bit more, perhaps a Johnny Cueto type, but the way continues, Derek.
Yeah, Johnny Cueto would be nice. I think Johnny Cueto would be very nice. Or maybe, how about this? You keep hearing that the Marlins want Johnny Cueto too, but they have to find a way to get Pablo Torres signed. So, Pablo Lopez signs or find a way to trade him. So what do you say they do like an NBA sign and trade? The Padres sign Johnny Cueto, trade him to the Marlins for Pablo Lopez.
There you go. Is there
I would do that in a heartbeat.
Is there one between the two that you feel more strongly about?
If you can get this thing, the system, as we know, is weakened after all the moves that have been made. So you're probably going to be better off trying to find somebody at the free agent route. And Cueto would be great. But if you can get a guy like, the Marlins right-hander, who's still got 2 years of control left and who is going to be in his age 27 season and is on the ascending part of his career, you want that guy instead. Now, can you get him? That remains to be seen. Can you get him without having to deal from your major league pool? You keep hearing, the Ha-Sung Kims and Trent Grishams of the world are all of a sudden on the trade block, or at least they'll listen on those guys. It'd be nice to add without having to give up any of your assets. But if you're talking about which would you rather have, regardless of the price that it takes to get them, give me the young kid who's on the upswing of his career. And if we've seen him in person, he's really good.
Yeah, certainly. And like you said, it might take just a little more creativity in order to make a deal like that happen. Whereas obviously Johnny Cueto, you go on the free agent route as long as you can make the money work. I guess I'm a little nervous or skeptical about the Padres' ability to hang in a bidding war at this point, because especially after the Bogaerts deal, it's just hard to tell how much they're willing to offer to somebody year in and year out. Having brought in Carpenter and Lugo on top of that, they've surprised us before But hearing that there are at least the Marlins, and I think he mentioned another team or other teams in the mix, you just
the Reds going back to Cincinnati.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, and if it comes down to that, I mean, it comes down to what does Johnny Cueto want? Can he get more money from the Reds? Probably. Is he going to have any chance of winning with the Reds? Absolutely not. Does he want to come to San Diego for maybe a little bit less, but have a legitimate chance to win a World Series? No question. Remember, he won one with the Royals in 2015. Of course, he might also look at it as, I'll go to Cincinnati, I'll kill it for the first half of the year, and they'll deal me to a contender mid-year anyway. So he can be playing best of both worlds for him. And especially after what he did last year, he was really good in Chicago. Nobody kind of kept an eye on him. He didn't start until early May, still threw 150 innings with a sub-4 ERA. Like, I'll take that guy. If that's your fifth or sixth starter, by all means, give me that dude as your fifth or sixth starter on this staff.
Yeah, a sub-2 walks per nine innings, too. You know, he's not going to punch a ton of guys out, but he's not going to hurt himself in the process. And
he doesn't break a plane of glass with his fastball. I mean, he's like 91, 92, but all those different deliveries and nothing he throws is straight. I mean, it is slider, sinker, and changeup. Everything's moving all over the place, and he can locate them all. He doesn't walk anybody, as you said. And guys with control, remember, control and command, as Kyle Glazer explained on his very podcast, they're very different. He's got both. He doesn't throw a lot of pitches outside the strike zone. And the pitches he throws inside the strike zone, he puts them where he wants them to be. So if he's got command of this stuff, it doesn't have to be overpowering if you're putting it where you want to put it and keeping hitters off balance. That's what he showed he can still do last year.
And it would just be fun, right? You know, clubhouse fit, you know, a Dominican guy, you know, I don't know what relationships these guys have with one another, but you would think he would mesh well with this group. I always think about that funny interaction he had with Tatis. Was it 20 or 21 where Cueto was being Cueto and doing Cueto things and Tatis kind of gave him the little shimmy back, you know, just having another. And, you know, there is some quirkiness already in this pitching staff. There are unique types of arms and deliveries and approaches already. And so there's so many different aspects to Johnny Cueto that I think would make him just a natural, really good fit with the Padres. And he'd be fun to watch, you know, for a full 162 game season. You just don't, I mean, he keeps it entertaining. He keeps it interesting. He keeps you guessing. And so I think having a guy like Johnny Cueto would be a lot of fun and just a good fit. And for a team that's looking for those, you know, back end of the rotation type starters, I mean, that he's a great, he checks all those boxes.
And you're right. That's a great call because you got a guy like Yu Darvish who throws 37 different pitches, but they all look like the same pitch. Whereas Johnny Cueto throws four pitches and his delivery looks like he's throwing 37 different pitches.
Yeah. What's remarkable, I mean, we've been talking about Johnny Cueto, I mean, just, you know, in terms of the baseball conversation for so long. I mean, I remember, you know, going back to past in, you know, years ago, Phillies playoff runs and them running into Johnny Cueto when he was early in his career with the Reds. For a guy that's, you know, only made a couple All-Star teams, you mentioned it, won a World Series, career ERA, sub 3.5, you know, debuted in 2008. His durability is, I mean, pretty incredible.
It's been really good. He's had a couple of years he's had to deal with some injuries, but over the long haul, I mean, every pitcher is going to deal with some, you know, level of that. Remember, he started the All-Star game in 2016 right here at Petco Park. So he's been good for a long time, and he's been elite at times.
So he would, you know, I think as we kind of assess where they are with the rotation, you know, he seems to be top of mind just because of, you know, the reports that have been out. He's been linked to the Padres now by a couple of the insider types. And so there's that. So he seems to be kind of high on everybody's list and kind of the maybe most logical, most realistic option if they're able to make the money right. I'm curious just how you feel in general about this mix of guys, and do they go with the six-man rotation? They have got, you know, they've got swing types with Lugo and Martinez and young guys that we're hoping can kind of figure it out, like Morejon and Kinnear and perhaps Weathers. There's going to be some competition spring training, which you love to see. And you hope one of those young guys can kind of surprise you and maybe, you know, seize hold of that opportunity finally after having been around for a couple few years. What's just your general outlook on this collection of guys knowing that there's still the hope. And I'd throw in Will Marfont now in that mix as well, a guy that's going to be able to go to Peoria and give himself a chance to earn a spot. How do you see this group as it currently stands?
So real quick, for folks who don't know who Will Marfont is, because I'll be honest, I had forgotten that he had at one time been a Major League Baseball player.
It's true. It's probably worth signed into talking a about
minor league deal. He's a free agent. He spent the last 2 years in the KBO. That's the Korean Baseball Organization, as I read a little bit here from our folks at MLB Trade Rumors. 2 years, 3.03 ERA, 24.5% strikeout rate, only walks 6%, which is good. 95 on his fastball, gets a lot of ground balls, 53% ground balls, and with that, good the Padres infield should be. That's probably what AJ Preller looked at, is like, this dude throws a truckload of ground balls. We've got a fantastic defensive infield that we're going to put together at Petco Park. Bring this guy in, see what he can do. Now, again, as we know, and this is what we talked about with Ha-Sung Kim when he came over, is you're looking at about the equivalent of like a double A, in between double A and triple A level in America. That's what about the KBO plays to on average. So got a guy who's 31, 32 years old, who's doing it against the talent level that would be the equivalent of like 21-year-olds here in America. So did he figure something out? Can he be that guy? Don't know, but he certainly is worth taking a flyer on, especially on a minor league deal. Remember, that's what Jorge Alfaro had last year going into spring training, and he hit his way onto the opening day roster. And of course, he gave us some amazing moments throughout the year at Petco Park. Maybe they caught lightning in the bottle with Will Marfont as well. But to your question, I don't see how they don't have a six-man rotation, at least for the first couple months of the year, because as we've talked about on this podcast, when you look at how fresh the starting rotation was, I will go to my grave, which may be sooner rather than later, saying it was those guys looked better in the postseason and their starters were fresher in the postseason, especially the top three, because they used the six-man rotation and they were kept fresher longer throughout the year. Bob Melvin initially wasn't really a big fan of that idea. He took to it like that when he saw how well his guys were doing. I think the Padres almost have to at this point, with the 26-man rosters, go with a six-man rotation here. Now, you know who the first three are, and you pretty much pencil Nick Martinez in for number four. Now, can you find two more guys? If you bring in a guy like Cueto or Lopez, no question you've got five. Now, can you find a sixth or a seventh? And as you know, it's going to take, what, 8, 9, 10 guys at some point during the year to start games. The best case scenario is the first four do what you hope they're going to do, and they're fantastic. And then you get a guy, maybe find another guy, like, you know, Seth Lugo comes in, and he becomes that version of this guy. And then either you sign a Cueto, or one of these youngsters does take that step up, like Mackenzie Gore did last year. Now, granted, none of these guys are on the same level of a prospect as Mackenzie Gore, but will Ryan Weathers figure it out? Will Maury Home, who, remember, was given an $11 million signing bonus coming out of Cuba, which is just a massive amount, and we've seen him show the talent that he has. Can he become a starting pitcher and consistently give you five innings? Because that's all you want from your sixth starter anyway, right? You're not doing a bullpen game. You just five innings. That's all we need. That's all we want. Give us that and let the offense try and outslug somebody else, even though he's got, you know, top third of the rotation type stuff. That's the best case scenario. You get one of those guys who comes in and rips the starting job from everybody else and says, okay, these are the guys we're going with. And then you have a bunch of really talented options. Maybe at the AAA or AA level you can go to during the year when you need it. So I think they have to have the six man. I think they probably have enough bodies to legitimately think they can fill those six roles capably. Maybe got to go out and get one more established guy to then guarantee you will have at least six guys who can fill those roles capably.
One quick word on Will Marfont. There was a Derek Togerson-ism that popped in my mind when I was looking at his highlights. Long levers. I think I'm using that right.
Oh, yeah. No, really
he almost
good.
Has like a cricket delivery. I mean, it's kind of like almost like a long straight arm, and then he's just kind of dropping it right on top of you.
Yeah, it's a great point. He does have very, very long levers. I mean, he's not a small guy, but he's almost like Tim Lincecum. It wasn't anywhere near 6 feet, but he looked like he was 6'3 when he was throwing because everything was so exaggerated and long. Font kind of – now, again, I'm not comparing him to Tim Lincecum. But
so what you're saying is Will Marfont can be the Tim Lincecum for this pitching staff.
Perfect. No question. Yes, absolutely. He's going to win three Cy Young Awards. Book it right now. He uses every last little bit of his frame to get as long as he possibly can, which is, as you know, this is straight up physics. You know, say Randy Johnson can throw the ball 100 miles an hour because he's 6'10". the farther something gets away from the center of the spin, the faster it's moving. So if you naturally, if you have something farther away from your core when it is turning, it is going to be moving faster. Arm speed speeds up, velocity from the pitch speeds up. That's simple, pure physics. You can't argue with that. So if he's able to maximize every last half inch of his frame to get the release point a little bit farther away from the center of the spin, then he's going to be able to generate more velocity. Maybe that's how he ticked his fastball up to 95 the last couple of years.
Yeah. It also looked like he kind of struggled to figure out the appropriate pitch mix when he was in the bigs. And maybe that's something he's unlocked the last couple of years, could hopefully give him some success with the Padres. We'll see.
Nick Martinez did the same thing in Japan. He went there, figured out what kind of pitcher he was, and he had a fantastic year with the Padres coming back here for his first year back in Major League Baseball.
So back to the six-man rotation thing, because I think like the tug of war is you've got a six-man rotation, but then you're removing assets like Nick Martinez and Seth Lugo from the bullpen, guys that can give you long relief. So I in one sense, you're maybe taxing your bullpen a little bit more now, hoping that those guys every six games can go a little bit deeper, and like we saw them do, you know. So that's kind of the upside there. If you stick to a more traditional five-man rotation and you have a Lugo type in the bullpen, like what does that do for you? I think that's what all of us were kind of juggling, and including Bob Melvin kind of juggling, like how much do I want to allocate these resources to my bullpen where they're readily available day in and day out, or put this guy in a spot where he's pitching once every 6 days and hope that we're giving the bullpen a little bit more rest because these guys are fresher and potentially have a chance to go into later into games. And so I think that's, you know, I think that's the struggle with the situation like this. And the other thing too is like the six guys earned it this past season. Like Mackenzie Gore was phenomenal to start the year, is really good in spring training. And so
didn't even make the club out of spring training, even though how good he was.
You can't necessarily, I feel like you have to caution against just necessarily penciling in, yeah, we're going to do a six man rotation. Like those six guys need to earn it. And you got to make sure you have six dudes that can, you know, not the three studs and then three guys that aren't, you know, going to get you the 6-7 innings that you need, and you end up, you know, over the course of those few days, putting your bullpen kind of in a tough spot.
What about Tulio Tehran?
Another interesting one, and such a AJ Preller hire in that, because I was working in Georgia when he was about to come up in Atlanta, and you know, he seems to find these like former highly rated prospect types and an attempt to kind of tap into that previous potential.
I mean, he's a guy, I'm looking at his baseball reference page right now. He's only thrown 12 and a third innings as a reliever. Sorry, 12 and two thirds innings as a reliever in his life. 1,383 and two thirds innings as a starter at the major league level. Now, what does that mean for him? Maybe he's that guy who at this point in his career is transitioning into that kind of super utility reliever role, who can give you 3-4 innings out of the bullpen, but can also pitch a high leverage inning in the seventh inning when you need him to. Also remember, cross your fingers, Drew Pomeranz will be back this year. And he's a guy who's one hell of an option. In fact, if he's healthy and you're 6-7-8-9 is Pomeranz, Garcia, Suarez, Hader. Damn, you are shortening games a ton. Now, again, those guys can't throw every single day, not going to have to. But if that's the case, when you get into a playoff type situation and those four guys are out there lurking in the bullpen, man, that makes you, that gives you a lot more options with what you can do with your pitching staff. And you do make a good point on, you don't want to just have a six-man rotation for the sake of it. You want six guys who make you think these guys are all capable starting pitchers. That was what they looked at last year. And if they don't have six guys who they think are going to not make them have a bullpen game every sixth day, then maybe they do go with a five-man rotation. But you got to figure that AJ and these guys can find six dudes who want to play for this club with how much they're on the ascension toward a playoff berth.
Yeah, because those six guys made that decision as much as Bob Melvin made the decision, right? You know, they forced their hand into that where it just made too much sense.
Well, it was crazy. Remember, Clevinger and Snell, they were both hurt to start last year. Yeah. So they didn't even have those two guys in the mix. So they had, you know, basically eight starting pitchers they were rolling with, Martinez being one of them and Gore being another one. Martinez went to the bullpen when either Clev or Snell came back. I can't remember which one. And then by the time the other guy was ready, well, Mackenzie Gore, as we know, was sent off to Washington to bring in Juan Soto. So, I mean, it all worked out okay in the end.
And this is all, I mean, we're talking about getting through 162 games here, right? Because as we see in the postseason,
no, we're talking about getting through 135 games. That's when they'll clinch the National League West.
There you go.
With 27 games left to play,
then you can just make sure everybody's healthy, right, and fresh for another October run. Because as we saw and as we see every year, it's 3.5 guys, you know, it's 4 guys tops that you're really having to ride. And hopefully there is a fourth that emerges as a guy that, cause you know, they didn't have that this year, this past year, they didn't have that with Mike Clevinger. And so it was a mystery. Once you got through Darvish, Snell and Musgrove. And so hopefully over the course of those 135 games, you solidify that spot. You go into it with a guy that, for that fourth spot in the postseason, isn't going to be a question mark or isn't going to kind of put you in a tough position, but you got to get there. And, fortunately there's a lot of firepower on this roster as it stands. And, you know, it's not, I don't think it'd be like the first half of the 2021 season where the starting rotation just absolutely carries the team. I would like to think there won't be quite as much on their shoulders, to this point. The other thing too is, you know, as beat up as they were in 2021, they were remarkably healthy in 2022, with the exception of Mike Clevinger going through some things. And so I think that's, you know, that's always kind of lurking in the back of your mind. Like, that's, Yu Darvish isn't young. He works really hard, takes care of himself, but we've seen him have issues. Joe Musgrove takes remarkable care of himself, but there's only so much you can do. Blake Snell, we've seen him have some injury issues. And so that's just one of the things with sports. You don't know what kind of injury luck you're going to have year in and year out. Hopefully it's similar to what they had in 2022. But there's the part of me that when you do have a season where it went as well as it did from that standpoint, you can't help but be like a little bit nervous that, well, what if there is an injury to one of those top three guys or two of those top three guys, and you're really in a rough spot. Conversely, you've got now Xander Bogaerts and Fernando Tatis Jr. coming. So hopefully you got a little more margin for error.
And let me throw this at you. How about other trade options other than, you know, Pablo Lopez? One guy that I think had a really bad year, but can come back and be really, really good, especially if he's not being counted on at the top of the rotation, Lucas Giolito. Has had injury problems, has been, you know, pretty solid the last couple of years. Now, and then you got a guy, I think you can get him probably for not all that much, because the White Sox probably know they're not in contention this year. They've got too many holes. You don't know what's going on with the new skipper. They're not in the greatest division in the American League Central, but Cleveland is not going anywhere. Minnesota probably got a little bit better, even though they did lose Carlos Correa. And then the other guy, and I know we're talking about injury problems, and this guy the last few years has had nothing but injury problems, but there are rumblings out of Boston that Chris Sale could be had. If that dude is healthy, give him the World Series right now. Would you make a move right now for Chris Sale, assuming, again, it's probably not going to take a whole lot to pry him out of Boston, given the fact that he's only thrown a handful, really, of innings the last couple of years?
There was a report that he could be had, right?
Yeah, and also they just agreed with Rafael Devers on a $330+ million contract. So, amazingly as it might sound, you know, the Boston Red Sox might be wanting to shed some salary here, and that could make them a little more motivated to get rid of a contract right now.
But how would that? I mean, are you assuming 27.5 per year?
But you got to take on whatever he has left. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is 27.5 this year, next year, and 20 and 25.
Yeah. He's 55 million through the next two seasons. So you're talking about 27.5 average.
Average. Yeah. Yeah. The deal on the whole, the average is 29. I don't know how it's impacted by, you know, once you trade the guy. But I mean, he's scared. You want to hear something weird? I swear I had a dream that the Padres traded for Chris Sale. This is like 2 weeks ago, and then I woke up and hopped on my phone, and there was a tweet that he was on the market. I swear.
Okay, that's so, kind of creepy, dude.
It's very
still, like Sixth Sense kind of thing.
I've never had this happen.
Barney Shyamalan.
I swear, and I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about Chris Sale, but I swear I had a dream that the Padres traded for Chris Sale, and then like the next day, there's a report that he could be had.
Well, how about this? I mean, he's since August of 2019, he's made 11 appearances. Elbow inflammation, which had to Tommy John surgery, stress fracture in the rib cage, broken finger, broken wrist. I mean, it's just been one thing after another with this guy who, I mean, until then, he was on a Hall of Fame career pace.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would argue with that. And the guy, I mean, he's a bulldog. He comes at you with everything that he has. And he'll always kind of have a soft spot in my heart because, again, going back to that 2016 All-Star game at Petco Park, he was starting for the American League. And this was shortly after Tony Gwynn had passed away. And he got up there and he said, without even being asked the question, said, I'm so happy to be starting this game here in San Diego because Tony Gwynn saved my life. Because of him, he stopped chewing smokeless tobacco.
Oh, wow.
And he says that it was, you know, he saw what happened with Tony. He's like, I couldn't do it anymore. And he talks about how much respect he had for Mr. Padre and just how cool it was to start that game in this ballpark in the town. I mean, Tony obviously never played there, but the place, I mean, he's one of the reasons it was built. So that was really cool. So he'll always have a spot in me where I respect that guy and would love to see him in a Padre uniform. And that's a dude who, I mean, it's almost like if you know, you're taking a flyer on a free agent signing, right? Where you're not going to have to give up a whole heck of a lot to get him because of his recent injury history, unless for some reason, you know, Kyle Bloom over there thinks that he's 100% healthy. He's going to come back to being the guy who can lead a rotation again. Boston has to get younger in their starting rotation. They already let Nathan Eovaldi go. They're going to have to find some other pitcher somewhere. Throw a couple of young pitching prospects at him and say, hey, you know what? Give us this dude. We'll see if we can do a little reclamation project. The more I thought about that, the more I thought that. And again, I know we're talking about the Padres had nothing but great injury luck last year, aside from the whole Tatis thing. Why not? You know, well, roll the dice again and get a guy who is one of the best left-handers in the last 50 years in Major League Baseball.
Send Jay Groom back to Boston.
Why not send him back there and throw another like a, you know, a Weathers or a Kinnear or, you know, and then maybe a bullpen piece to throw something back there at him. You know, they're looking for a first baseman. Do we have any of those laying around?
Well, he's in Chicago now, isn't he, Derek?
No, a real first baseman. Boston just had him, and they said, no thanks.
We're good. We're good.
What's worse than a big potato sitting on the couch?
Is that a Derek Togersonism?
It has to be something.
In the peanut gallery.
Was there a baked potato joke about Eric Hosmer that I missed, Derek?
Well, I'm sure there is somewhere, yes. is Fernando referring to the tweet where I said the Padres would be better off with a baked potato at first base right now than Eric Hosmer?
Yeah, that's the one. And yet, I'm the one that can't see any of Eric Hosmer's tweets, which drives me nuts. You know,
but are you missing a lot though? I don't follow Eric Hosmer on social media. Are you missing anything by not being able to see his tweets?
He doesn't tweet all that often, but Marcus Stroman was kind of banging the drum for Hosmer the other day when they made the signing. And so those two were kind of interacting. So I was just kind of curious what they were saying.
Well, because they were together on that 2017 World Baseball Classic team back when Eric Hosmer cared about being a capable baseball player.
Yeah, it was a different version of Eric Hosmer. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how the guys feel about him from a defensive standpoint. And they're like defense and DH. I mean, I guess as a platoon guy, especially in the months of April and May, but beyond that, I don't know.
And Bob, what a charmed life that clown is leading. But he lucked himself into another $720,000. How?
Again, I'm the one who's blocked on Twitter by Eric.
That's the one that broke my back, folks. That's the one right there.
Doesn't make any sense. Back to Chris Sale real quick. I mean, the 192 innings in 2012, 214, 174, 208, 226, 214, then .158, 147. Guy's thrown a lot of innings that stretch leading up to things kind of going south for him.
Should be fresh.
High 20s, mid-high 20s might be a lot for a bit of a reclamation project. I don't know if, but again, not my money. You know, I'm not the one paying the taxes and surrendering the draft picks. So if they see it fit, you know, that's up to Peter Seidler.
Well, he doesn't have a qualifying offer on him. Obviously, he's not a free agent. So if you're just giving away a couple of prospects, you know.
Well, I mean, like in future, if you continue to go over, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, that's like they're in win this year mode, right? Because then after this year, we've talked about, you got to worry about after Manny opts out, trying to bring him back. Snell and Darvish are both free agents. Pomeranz's contract is up. Hopefully gives you something on this deal. You're going to have question marks next year. So if you're going to go all in right now, go all the hell in right now.
Which, pivoting to something that you just referenced a little bit earlier, maybe that makes it wise to hold on to Ha-Sung Kim and Trent Grisham. You know, if you have some controllable everyday type guys that you're not paying a ton of money for, that you would be
great defensively. They're both elite defensive players.
Yeah, like it probably makes sense to hold on to them from that standpoint. When there's so much on the air and you just don't up in the air and you just don't have a whole lot of assets that you can play around with, I would feel uncomfortable getting rid of Ha-Sung Kim or Trent Grisham. The other thing too is I feel like their defensive alignment makes sense. They got Xander Bogaerts. We got pretty much right away an idea of how it's going to work. You know, we haven't heard Bob Melvin like sign off on it, but the idea is Tatis and right, Soto and left, Bogaerts at short, Kim slides to second, Cronenworth to first, yada, yada.
But like remember, this... Bob did say at the winter meetings, he said, talking about Tatis, he's got position flexibility. His words, you can put him in right, you can put him in short, you can put him in first. He slid that one in there, Darnay.
Here's the thing, though. Based on the 1 year with Bob Melvin, he doesn't seem like a manager that likes utilizing positional flex. He's like the whole Jerks and Profar situation. That's it with Jerks. He can play corner infield. He can play second. He can play outfield, obviously. He played almost exclusively left field last year. Melvin,
was he going to third base over Manny Machado?
No,
there's no reason for him to play other places.
That's true, but Melvin seems like he prefers to slot a guy in and let him get comfortable there rather than move him around. I could be completely wrong, but that's the read that I had after 1 year about Melvin.
He had Eric Sogard play four, five, six different positions in Oakland. When he has those different types of guys, then, and again, how long did he have a superstar when he was managing the Oakland A's? You know, he had to move guys all over the place. He's got superstars here. So you don't have to move Manny Machado around. You don't have to move Ha-Sung Kim. You don't have to move Juan Soto. You don't have to move Trent. You don't have to move these guys to different places. You got a superstar who's there 155 times a year. Leave them there and don't worry about it. So that cuts down on the amounts of ways you got to use guys moving to other, you know, different places, different positions.
He could have used them at first.
Could use a lot of guys at first. Could use a couple of baked potatoes at first.
But back to my original point, I just feel like you're also creating issues you don't need to create, because then you're gonna have to find a center fielder, and then does that impact your plan with Fernando Tatis Jr., or you're gonna have to find a second baseman? Does Tatis come back to the infield, and then you're looking for your right field? You know what I mean? It's like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. Like you're just kind of opening up issues that you don't need to open up when you kind of have things seemingly figured out.
Yeah. At that point, you're weighing which is better in the whole, you know, in the aggregate. Is putting this guy here for a few games going to make you better for those games, you know, match up against a tough lefty, whatever it may be, versus the other lineup possibilities that you have. You know, so you got to talk. You're always talking about what's going to give us an edge in whatever matchup we happen to have that day.
Yeah, it's nice to have kind of the DH situation with Carpenter. And then you mentioned the flexibility that's going to give them an opportunity to give, you know, some of those guys more days off their feet and off the field. And hopefully that helps from a health standpoint.
And Carpenter can play first. He's done it very capably. He plays first. He's right side of the infield kind of guy, right? He's played first and second very capably. Probably didn't have the foot speed right now for shortstop. Can probably handle third base a little bit in short stints. But then that means, okay, Manny needs a day to be a DH. Great. Cronenworth goes back to second. Kim goes to third. Bam. You've got everything all set up. You know, so they do have that type of thing set up now, especially for just resting guys throughout the course of a long season.
Yeah. And
an article on NBC San Diego that says Tatis can play first as well.
Fernando speaking again. What do you say now?
He said there's an article on NBC7 saying that Tatis can play first base. I don't want to get yelled at, so I don't know if I want to get into this topic.
Who would yell at you about putting Tatis at first? I think it's a great idea. Why didn't I think of it?
All of Twitter. You did think of it. Now, Carpenter also played a decent amount in his short 2022 season in the outfield, for what it's worth.
Yeah, he can go out there too.
So I don't know. I don't love the idea of moving Grisham and Kim. I don't know what to expect from Trent Grisham going into the season. I think, you know, there's still it's fair to have a decent amount of skepticism offensively from what you're going to get from him, but you know what he does for you defensively, and then the lineup should be considerably better when you bring in Xander Bogaerts and hopefully Fernando Tatis Jr. And hopefully he shakes the rust off and looks like himself and on top of kind of like healing up from the shoulder and healing up from the wrist and all that. There's probably going to be some concern about, those three help them in the Mets series and then hurt them at portions late, you know, the Nola Grisham, kind of Kim. Bottom of the order, Kim. Thank you. You know,
those three in the playoffs until the NLCS were phenomenal.
Yeah, and so they were kind of feast or famine, and I think the fear is running to a situation where the top five and six are eaten, but then you get to the bottom three, and you know it's tough sledding.
Yeah, and that brings the other question up: is the starting everyday starting catcher on this club right now? Like Austin Nola, obviously, you think is going to be the guy. If he's, again, you know, not hitting up to the point where they need him to be hitting, as good as he is behind the plate and as much as the pitching staff loves throwing to him, and he's not as bad offensively as Austin Hedges was and still is, do you still need to find something else in there? You know, is Luis Camposano going to be a guy who can rip that starting job away from him?
I am kind of sneaky excited about Luis Camposano just based on what we saw during the regular season, where he's hitting, you know, 300 plus. You know, there's some power in there, and it's just kind of waiting for that to come out of the big league level. You know, it's obviously kind of the relationship with the pitchers, handling a staff, all that stuff. He's got good experience now with Joe Musgrove, and hopefully Joe can vouch for him a little bit. And just another year of seasoning, another year playing for, you always like talking about managers that were former catchers, a guy that fits that bill in Bob Melvin. But you know, Camposano finally showed us some good things, at least offensively, towards the end of last year, that gives me, you know, even before they had gotten Carpenter, I was like, hey, maybe they got their DH in Camposano. I don't know. It could be a stretch, but we've been waiting for that to come around. If it does, that's not the worst option. And I wouldn't necessarily hate a situation where he's at least splitting reps behind the plate with Austin Nola, like we saw with Jorge Alfaro. Because you know, Nola was phenomenal during the postseason, had some big moments offensively. We know how he is handling the staff, struggles to control the run game. That's a thing. But, you know, since 2020 offensively, he'll hit for average a little bit, but you're just not getting a ton out of that spot.
Well, if you're looking for a DH option, Chest Moss is still out there. I would bring Luke Voit back in a heartbeat.
That's true. There was about a month or so ago, he was looking pretty enticing. I guess it must have been pre Matt Carpenter heartbeat. You know, he loved being here.
He's a great dude, great clubhouse teammate, guy. And yeah. I think he can put together a 25 home run season in this ballpark. I would take that. Probably better than what you're going to get. Again, unless Matt Carpenter is for 500 at-bats what he was for 130 at-bats with New York last year. If you're getting that, then ain't nobody taking him out of the starting lineup. If he's not quite that, maybe how about a left-right kind of DH platoon with those two guys? And then somebody spells somebody else at first base every now and again. You know, I'd be all over that. That would just be fun.
Yeah, I was looking at because I was looking at Luke Voit's numbers. He had the second best. Do I have this right? Is this a qualified?
Yeah, and as you're looking, remember, as you yourself said, if you're looking for somebody to play a corner outfield spot, Matt Carpenter, get his bat in the lineup doing that as well.
Yeah. This is not – there we go. Luke Voigt's OPS plus as a Padre was basically third best on the team. He had Manny Machado, then Juan Soto, and then – I mean, this isn't a great comparison, but then Eric Hosmer, Luke Voigt, ahead of Jake Cronenworth, Jerickson Profar, Will Myers, Brandon Drury down the line. And, you know, Luke, he got off to a really frustrating slow start. We were waiting for the guy to hit a home run. And, finally got it clicking a little bit. But even with those struggles, because of the power, he just gives you an aspect offensively that this team was really lacking. I think between that and just kind of the personality side, how much he loved being here, you just know that trade deadline day and the way everything shook out with, again, going back to Hosmer, had to have killed Luke Voigt. But just a good dude, and I think the fan base would love to see him back, and I'm sure Don Orsillo would love to see him back too.
No question. Absolutely no question. That would be awesome. I mean, look, even after that first month, that was truly horrendous. I remember watching video of him at AAA when he had to go down because it was a biceps tendonitis, something. He had some physical ailment. He had to go down. He struck out like 10 straight at bats and something like 14 times out of 16 at bats. Like, he looked completely lost at the plate. They brought him up. Even after all that, he had a 733 OPS. Even after it was like 400 for the first month of the season. So he did turn it on and was a viable first DH / first base option for this club after that first month, 6 weeks. So if he's going to give you, like I said, a season of anywhere close to that, take it like that and run.
Yeah. Before we close this thing out, did you see Carlos Baerga's latest report?
No. What is Carlos Baerga, the former switch-hitting Cleveland Guardian, up to?
Did you see he broke the Rafael Devers news?
No, he didn't.
He had the original Devers report.
Nice.
His latest report is that the Dodgers and the Padres might be interested in Aroldis Chapman.
Interesting.
Now, Aroldis comes with some off-the-field baggage.
A lot of off-the-field baggage.
It's pretty bad. Gauging the temperature of the fan base on Twitter, aggressive disinterest in Aroldis Chapman, which I'm, can certainly understand. But that's an interesting one, and it comes from a source that just broke some big news for the Red Sox. So we'll see the legitimacy of it. But I think a lot of us would probably be good without that whole thing.
Now, what you said, the Dodgers also?
Yes.
Given the fact they just had Trevor Bauer, why would they want to bring in somebody with the off-the-field baggage that Aroldis Chapman has?
Well, they technically...
And does that suggest that the Dodgers don't give a crap and they're going to also bring back Trevor Bauer?
I was going to say, technically, they still have Trevor Bauer for at least a day, to make that decision, right? So I don't know. I'd rather see him at Dodger Stadium than Petco Park.
But how many? That would be what? Pomeranz, I'm not sure, has ever touched 100. But that's at least four guys in your bullpen. Which two of them from the left side, you can throw 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's scary.
But you know what? You know what's weird? I can't get excited about that because of the individual.
Yeah.
That's one of those you don't need it.
You don't need it. That's the thing. You don't need it. You don't, at the end of the day, you don't need it. His presence is not going to make or break this team.
No, maybe, now will it make the Dodgers better. Maybe you're trying to block them. Sure. But you don't need that kind of talent on this team right now. You also don't need that kind of baggage on this team ever.
Actually, let's not end on that note. Because of you mentioning the Dodgers, I want to ask you something because I was looking this up last night on the TV side. Pitch you two different types of projections from two national outlets, and I want you to say which you think will be closer to the truth.
Okay.
FanGraphs released their Dodgers projections, and in kind of the summary, they said they expect it to be the tightest NL West race in a full season in quite some time, but they could also see the Dodgers winning 105 games and comfortably winning the NL West. So there's one side of it. Then there's Bradford Doolittle of ESPN. You might have seen this, released his projections for all 30 teams, and he had the Padres behind the Mets for win total Major League Baseball wide, but certainly in the National League, expected to win 99.9 games, like three behind the Mets, with the Padres expected to win 89.7. So you got one where there's like a 10-game gap between the Padres and Dodgers in favor of the Padres, and the other FanGraphs saying, expect it to be really close, wouldn't be surprised if the Dodgers came away with another division title. Where you sit right now, which do you think is closer to the truth?
The FanGraphs is going to be closer to the truth. As we saw in the last year in the playoffs, the gap has been closed. And now they know what to do over the course of a, again, 162-game season. The Dodgers got worse this offseason. The Padres got better this offseason. So if you're talking about during the regular season, that gap's going to it's going to be really, really tight. I mean, really, really, like, very fun to have that in the National League East. Man, because the Braves are still really good, and the Phillies are not going anywhere either. So, I mean, as much as the Mets, we all kind of marvel at what they've done, like, holy crap, and they've got Buck Showalter, who obviously is one of the top managers in the game. We're going to see that the National League East and the National League West are going to be a lot tighter than anybody thinks they're going to be. So, do I think the Padres are going to win? I can't guarantee you right now that anybody's going to win any division. That's except maybe the Cardinals in the Central. Other than that, and one probably Houston in the American League West. Although I'm intrigued at what the Angels have done. Again, they haven't really, aside from Tyler Anderson, addressed a lot of their pitching problems. But you get a full season of Mike Trout, and you get a full season of Shohei Ohtani doing whatever Shohei Ohtani does, because I still don't understand how that man does the things that he does, because he's a freaking unicorn. They've added a lot of intriguing pieces. They might be make it interesting, at least in the West. Especially if Houston has that, you know, that World Series hangover that a lot of teams do tend to have. I can't tell you who's going to win the East or the West. And I think the FanGraphs projection of, I mean, I probably put both teams right now would like increase the Padres by 7 wins. So put them at 96, take away, 10, 12 wins from the Dodgers, and they're sitting right around 100. And then you see what happens in the middle of the year with the trade deadlines or who has injury problems. So they're both right there.
You don't see a situation where the Padres could end up being like a few games better, 7 games better by the end of the season.
Well, of course I do. Yeah, no question they could.
Because that was the ESPN projection was basically saying Padres could be, significantly better than the Dodgers.
Oh, they could. And that's the thing is could they? Yeah. Could the Padres win 110 games and the Dodgers win 94? Yeah, that's possible. But can I sit there and tell you right now that's what I think is going to happen? No, I got to see what happens during spring training, who else both teams bring in. Is Walker Buehler going to pitch at any point next year? Does Dustin May come back and give you anything? Can Julio Urias repeat this year that he just had with a sneaky ERA championship? Is Juan Soto back to being Juan Soto for a full year? Is Josh Hader back to being the Josh Hader that we saw in the playoffs, or the struggles he had early on when he got to the Padres? Which is there are a lot of unknowns. If you look at it just on paper and past performances of all these players, the Padres on paper right now I think are slightly better than the Dodgers. But baseball games aren't played on paper; they're played on television sets. And occasionally baseball fields. So we'll have to actually see how it all works in, this has been one of the buzzwords lately, especially after the DeMar Hamlin thing, but in real time, we're going to have to see how these things all go and how they progress throughout the course of 162 game season. It's going to be, I tell you what though, Darnay, the Diamondbacks are a lot better than people realize they're going to be. The Giants, I think, are just kind of treading water, and the Rockies, I don't know what the hell they're doing in Colorado, and neither do they. So, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens in the West this year.
Yeah, for sure. And you went through all that without even mentioning Fernando Tatis Jr. And like, what does he look like, after a full year off and rehabbing a couple different injuries and all that.
That's the other things. You get Juan Soto is, he could be an 8 war player this year, right? And you only got him for maybe 3 of those. There's 5. Tatis, as we've seen, has potential to be an 8-9 war player. If he is that guy, he's going to give you 8. So that's a 13 win difference just between those two guys.
Yeah. Bogarts.
That's a lot. And then, Bogarts versus Kim. Bogarts was a higher WAR player than Ha-Seong Kim was. So that's, you're talking about the potential for the Padres to go from 89 wins. And again, we're just counting. And it doesn't work this way. You can't just linearly stack numbers like that. But going from 89 to 102 wins, that like that's legitimately within their capability right now.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, this has been fun. Enjoyed hopping back on with you for the first time in a little while. It'll be another few weeks again for me. I'll catch back up as we're really getting close to spring training. It's crazy. It's like a month and a half.
Isn't it great?
I might need to start booking our hotels in Peoria. So very, very much looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot to talk about and a lot to see. And it's always a good time there. So very much looking forward to that, and appreciate you and appreciate Todd holding it down in the meantime and doing great work. Was listening to the last episode last night. You guys always obviously do a fantastic job. Todd was just peppering you with all types of questions. It was fun. I was excited to hear what he was coming up with one question to the next. That was a fun episode. If you haven't had a chance to check that one out. So yeah, thanks as always for listening. Again, you can catch us on YouTube, NBC7 San Diego, NBC7 OTT streaming app as well, and of course NBC7.com. Thanks as always for watching and listening. We'll catch you next time.